Blockbuster Blake Stubbs. Blake, that's your summer song?
Yes, John. Definitely is. I remember first hearing that song in the summer, and when you asked me, because you did, you said, what's your hot summer song? I said, well, Carly Rae Jepsen, of course. I'm a fan. I like that song. I think it's one of the best pop songs of last decade. So, yeah, count me. And again, I want to be very clear with the listenership. I'm a movie critic, not a music critic, but I love that song. I was very firm in my stance on it.
There you go. The summer is obviously the big time for the movies, one of the big times, summer blockbusters. We've had a couple this year, and I think we've over-talked Barbie and Oppenheimer. Still haven't seen either of them, unfortunately. And Mission Impossible, you could probably put in those. They're still playing everywhere, right?
Definitely are. All three of the films you just mentioned are playing everywhere, to my knowledge. I believe they're all off of, because Oppenheimer was the last one to be sitting in the IMAX seat. Screens across the country, I believe, right now are playing Blue Beetle in IMAX. That might shift this weekend to Gran Turismo. Oppenheimer had one heck of a run for being a three-hour biopic of sorts, even though it's a bit more than a biopic. And then, of course, Barbie, oddly enough, John, is going to get an IMAX run. In September, they're going to do 1 week of IMAX screenings for Barbie starting September 22nd. So if you're a huge Barbie fan, if you're going to go for your second, third, fourth, whatever it is viewing, and you want to see it on the biggest screen possible, September 22nd for about a week, you're going to get a chance to.
Is that an IMAX 3D?
I did not see anything about 3D, I doubt it, because I believe that the DP on the film, Rodrigo Prieto, did not shoot the film for 3D. However, John, when the studio's got a hot thing, you know they're going to make something happen. So maybe. I don't know.
Are we done with that 3D trend, Blake? It seems like there was like a 3 or 4 year period where it's like everything had to be 3D.
Everything.
Avatar was kind of cool because I thought they did it in a nice way where certain things were floating. It wasn't like popping out at you. But that was a trend that I think just they did to, you know, make you pay $5 extra to rent the 3D glasses.
Correct. And I'm in favor of it sort of dissipating, unless, with one exception, if the film is originally shot in 3D, if that's the intention from the get, I'm in. If it's something the studio is just putting it through a 3D process, I always find that those films end up looking darker. They don't have the same level of brightness or color pop that they would if you saw them in 2D, and that's always kind of been the general criticism of putting a movie back out in 3D. I also think part of it comes in with the glasses. I think they offer sort of like not a sunglasses, you know, tint to what you're going to watch, but I do think they bring down certain color densities. So personally, I'm in favor of them sort of weaning off that, unless, again, the film is from the start shot to be projected in 3D, which some theaters are equipped to do.
Man, you got technical about that, Blake.
I did. Yeah, well, it's something I've ranted about plenty of times in the past, except I haven't recently because not a lot of movies other than like Avatar have really taken that leap, or I haven't seen anything since Avatar in 3D, because I do feel like it's kind of falling by the wayside,
for
so
sure.
To speak.
Michael Mann is a Chicago. So, yeah. I wanted to pivot over to Michael Mann's long-awaited movie that's coming out. Tell us a little bit about Ferrari.
So Michael Mann's been working on Ferrari for a very long time. In fact, there was a period of time where no one thought the movie would ever get made because it was taking so long. But this is a film starring Adam Driver. It will be opening for the first time being screened at the Venice Film Festival, I believe, here in the next couple of weeks. The big thing about this movie, and the reason why it's going to get a release later this year, before the end of 2023, even in the midst of the strikes that are going on, is that Neon, the studio that is putting it out there, agreed to the terms set forth by the guild. So they get a pass. They can release films. And because of that, which when he was putting the finishing touches on the movie and the strikes were getting started, there were some headlines out there that he had crossed the picket line, so to speak, to go in and finish the film. It was because Neon intended on accepting the proposals from the guild. So he wasn't trying to, as I understand it, like upset anybody, and he actually supported the strikes and the, what's going on with them, but he was trying to get his film done on time because Neon expected to accept those terms and then put that film out before the end of 2023. So apparently the movie's going to have one of the craziest car crashes you've ever seen in a movie. So that came out just today. But again, it's Michael Mann. He's one of my favorite filmmakers, and it's going to star Adam Driver, who's one of the best working actors today, certainly one of the best of his generation. So I'm intrigued. And again, I don't think anybody out there has seen a single frame of this film yet.
Yeah.
Because there's no trailer. There's some set photos, and then there's some discussion that Mann has done during the production. But the intention is to really unveil this film finally here in the next couple of weeks in Venice. Alongside another film from a Chicago native who recently passed away, and I just talked about on this very show in the last few weeks, was William Friedkin. William Friedkin's final film, The Caine Mutiny Court Martial, will also debut at the Venice Film Festival. So Chicago's going to be represented at one of the biggest film festivals of the year through some of its favorite sons.
I want to ask you, thanks, Blake. I want to ask you about the strike after this break, because I'm curious, and you can ponder on this during the commercial break, Blake, and then let me know. I know that obviously actors aren't acting, writers aren't writing. Movies that have already been shot, are editors still editing? Are progress still being made on those, or are those people on strike too? We'll get that answer from Blockbuster Blake Stubbs. Blockbuster Blake joins us on 720 WGN. John in for John here this evening. Normally when I say that, it's for John Williams. Today for John Landecker. Blake Stubbs, I asked you the question. Let me tee it back up for the listeners, okay?
Sure thing.
Okay, so we got a strike going on. It's the writers. It's the actors. And so a lot of people are saying, well, boy, oh, my God, no movies are going to be made forever, and there's going to be such a long gap. And that may be coming. That may be true. My question is, if a movie was already shot and it's now in the hand of the editors or the composers or the other people that I'm sure you know about who go into making a film, is that halted, or are those people progressing and able to cover a little of the gap that we might get from films not coming out?
So I will preface this by saying I'm not a legal expert, nor am I a member of any of the unions, nor would I want to say everything I'm about to say is definitive. But my understanding of everything that you're asking about is it's not a simple answer, because in some cases there are some interim agreements that have been made for independent films that are either finishing up production or in post-production or are in the hands of a studio, like I mentioned before with Michael Mann's Ferrari, where that smaller studio agreed to the terms that the unions wanted them to, which, again, in the eyes of many of the actors and even writers, are saying, hey, that just goes to show you that a lot of our proposals are not unrealistic. You know, these are just things we want. These are things, if we're going to make a movie with you, this is what we want going forward. That means that a film can be released. There are some things that are being produced overseas that that these union strikes can't levy upon them. So like I read about a shoot with Jenna Ortega and Paul Rudd over in, I believe, Hungary that is okay to go forward. There's a shoot with Glenn Close for a television series called Tehran that is filmed overseas that is okay to film the second season. However, there are other actors who feel that they've been offered jobs with studios. For example, Viola Davis is one of these, who went on record as saying that she was going to not cross the picket line because in her mind, even if she took the job, even though the studio was going to make the film based on an interim agreement with SAG-AFTRA, she didn't want to cross it. So there are things that are in play and going on and moving forward, and there are a lot of things that are not. A big example that I can think of one that is not is Brad Pitt had a film that he was producing in Bulgaria, completely shut it down. So it's kind of all over the place. The answer is not really simple. It's going to be specific in every particular instance. I tried to give you a few where it's like, I think you kind of see why it's a difficult issue.
Mm-hmm.
And even some members of the unions disagree with the temporary or the interim agreements that will lead to the release of certain works. It just seems like, if anything, the independent side of this, so the smaller studio, the non-Disney productions, you're not going to see a new Marvel movie drop during this strike. They're not going to recast with new actors who cross the picket line, shoot a thing, edit it, and put it out there for the public. That's not on the table here. But things that have, you know, limited budgets or really short production times and the necessity to get out so that they can maybe return on investment in some capacity. If they're willing to agree to terms with the unions, they are okay and not considered crossing the picket line.
Okay, so
again, it's layered. It's all over the place.
So wait, I mean, just but yeah. Generally speaking, an editor is not part of the Writers Guild or the SAG-AFTRA, or are they?
As I understand it, they're not part of the Writers Guild, and I don't believe they're part of SAG-AFTRA. Although I could be incorrect about that.
Okay,
because. I have not run into any situation because, again, like with Michael Mann's film, they were finishing editing when the strike started. The film was not rendered complete, and he had to go into the studio and finish it. And so because they understood that, you know, Neon was going to be behind this and agree with the union to whatever terms they had, it was considered okay. So nobody really, I mean, aside from like a 48-hour period where it was, you know, oh, man, Michael Mann, of all people, crossed the picket line. When Neon put out that they were, okay, you know, on good terms with the unions, that story pretty much died as quick as it appeared in the headlines.
Okay, so we're in a yeah. very nebulous period, and there's no way to sum it up.
Yes,
and
very nebulous periods.
Which is, I mean, obviously they're fighting for what they want, but that certainly is going to mm-hmm. have an impact. I mean, we've already seen it in terms of, you know, like you're saying, appearances, trailers, people promoting their films. Yes. I mean, when do the films run out of the cachet? Like, are we at a point where there's not going to be any new releases for the most part, except for independent? I'm talking about like major studios. Are we not seeing any more?
Studios. I have a feeling that we will run it. There will be a problem in the near future, which will lead to extended theatrical releases for certain things. Obviously, the streaming services will probably have a plan in place. And in some cases, the streaming services make this whole issue more complicated because of where they produce much of their content. Well, I guess I'll call it content. I don't like using that word personally, but I will in this case.
Okay.
Whatever it is that they're putting out on their platform, they will have certain passes in place where things can keep getting made. And because of that, now again, and those passes may frustrate the unions, but there's not much they can do about it because it's not taking place here. Or I guess in North America would maybe be the best way to say it.
Okay.
Because a lot of things are produced in Canada, and I happen to know people who work in the Canadian television and film industry who are on strike. And they're just was reading a thread today on Facebook about how they're, many of them are discussing like ways to work, but in their situation, their unemployment insurance or whatever it is that they call it specifically, their unemployment insurance works differently than ours does here in the States because of healthcare.
Right.
So in many cases, it's better for them not to work because they will lose out on certain coverage elements when it comes to their health care.
Okay.
So it's a sticky wicket is the term, except it's a lot of sticky wickets. Like the further we go into this, John, the longer we could talk about it.
Yeah,
and I'm going to run out of stuff that I know about.
Yeah. Let's not go into the
it's
weeds.
It's complicated, you know, and I'm rooting for them, particularly because of AI. I know AI is a big sticking point in why these negotiations have failed. I know it's a big reason why a lot of these actors, particularly with the streaming services, aren't getting the residuals. I'm also hoping that gets changed. Because again, if you're gonna work in the entertainment industry, you need to be able to put a roof over your head. You need to provide, you know, insurance for yourself. And when you find out constantly, if you're paying attention to anything that these actors are saying on their picket lines, 87% of the people who are a part of SAG-AFTRA make like less than $26,000 a year. It's mm-hmm. not their primary source of income, and they can't even afford health, and they have to make that minimum just to qualify for the health insurance.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
this is not as simple as anybody could try to tell you at a, you know, over a couple of beers. You're going to need about 6 or 7 is basically the way to say it. I mean, that's it. And I'm still educating myself on a lot of it because I have friends that are on strike right now, and they're on these picket lines.
Yeah. It's also here in Chicago. I mean, look, the CineSpace is empty right now. A lot of Chicago films. And, you know, Chicago, it was really booming with film and TV. And we were welcoming mm-hmm. so many places. Then we get pandemic, boom. And then you get this. It's a real messy time. All right, Blockbuster Blake, I knew we
Absolutely.
Could call on you to be an expert on this stuff. Thanks for joining the show, okay?
Thank you very much, John. Always a pleasure.
All right, and let me just, for the record, say, I know you come on Landecker a lot, but I brought you to WGN first and let the record reflect that.
About 9 years ago, if I recall.
Wow.
Thank you.
That's crazy. I'm bragging because Blake knows his stuff. Okay, Blake, we'll talk soon, all right?
Absolutely. Thank you.
That's Blockbuster Blake Stubbs, who joins this program a lot, other programs as well.